This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Thank you so much for tuning in again today. You are going to be glad you did. I had a blast recording this episode, and I could have gone on for hours, but we didn't. I was talking with Jimmy Moore and his wife, Christine Moore, about their new book, Real Food Keto. Jimmy Moore, you might have heard of him before. He has been around in the podcast space long before I ever even probably knew what a podcast was. And you've heard me talk about him before because Jimmy Moore's previous book, one of them, he's written several, The Complete Guide to Fasting, is really what inspired my first ever 5-day fast that I did almost 2 years ago now, not quite 2 years ago. And I did a 7-day fast alongside him more recently, maybe 6 or 8 months ago or so. So he has written books on ketogenic diets. He's written books on cholesterol. He's written books on fasting. And I was over the moon when I learned that he and his wife, Christine, were writing Real Food Keto, because one of the things that I have struggled with is seeing so many people do a not real food version of keto, meaning they are focused on all the keto products out there. And you know, this happens, right? When something becomes very trendy or popular, keto diets, primal diets, paleo diets, whatever it is, all of the businesses and business owners and aspiring business owners are going to manufacture products to sell to this new space. So as keto, ketogenic diets, high fat, moderate protein, low carbohydrate, have grown in popularity, so have all of the processed food accoutrement of such a way of eating. And even beyond that, we see all of these keto cookbooks that tout these loopholes to keto. So you can have your keto cheesecake every single day, and you can have your fat bombs. Just mix up some heavy cream and some stevia and call it a meal. But it's not. People are eating in this way that makes them think they're doing right by their health, but what they're doing is shortcutting the nutrients their bodies need. And in a lot of cases, they're just eating more than their body needs. I'm sorry, you cannot eat cheese crisps whenever you desire them because they're keto. That's not the path to health, certainly not the path to fat loss. And Jimmy and Christine do a fantastic job in their new book, Real Food Keto, about why it is so important to make sure you're eating real food. So we talk about the book. We talk about all sorts of different offshoots of ketogenic diets, including things like Hashimoto's. Christine has Hashimoto's thyroiditis, as do I. We also talk about things like triglycerides. Blood lipid panels can be a common area of question and concern when we start talking about increasing dietary fat. They do a really fantastic job. And if I had to share with you one takeaway, no spoilers here, but it really is to listen to your body, and there is no one answer for what works or what doesn't work, because you have to find that answer for yourself. And when you pay attention to your body, you can. Somebody messaged me right when I was starting to record with Jimmy and Christine and said, what's better, 30% of calories from protein or more like 15 or 20? And the reality is, I don't know. I don't know what's true for you, but your body will tell you what's true for you. It depends so much on your age, your body composition, your activity level, your food preferences, and your food sensitivities. Because what is true for one person, who does best with 15% of their calories coming from protein is not at all true for the person who does best with 30% of their calories coming from protein. Anybody, and this comes up in the episode too, anybody who tries to say, this is the prescription, this is the way, should send your spidey senses into overdrive. I could go on and on and on about the things we chatted about, and I probably will do a follow-up episode. In fact, if you have questions about this conversation regarding real food keto or anything that I discussed with Jimmy and Christine, please let me know. I would be more than happy to dive into follow-up answers and topics and discussions. So just comment on the show notes page over at primalpotential.com or shoot me an email or direct message me on Instagram at Elizabeth Benton, and we will go from there. Without further ado, I want to give a huge congratulations to Christine Moore, as this is her first book. Last year, she was studying to be a nutritional therapy practitioner, or NTP, and she successfully achieved that goal and then went immediately into writing her first book. I, having just finished that myself, can celebrate that as the massive accomplishment it is. So congratulations to Christine as well as to Jimmy, because he is just cranking out books with an astonishing pace. And a special thanks to them for being willing to come on the Primal Potential podcast and share with all of us the work that they have been putting together. It is important stuff. And honestly, guys, even if you're like, nope, keto isn't for me, cool. There's still something for you in this episode as it relates to micronutrients, as it relates to gut health, as it relates to mindset as well, and learning our own individuality. So this episode is not just for keto eaters out there or people who are curious about keto. I believe there's something for everybody in this. And if you've got questions or you want to go deeper into something that we touched on, just let me know. Check out their book. Again, it's called Real Food Keto. And I want to welcome Jimmy and Christine to the Primal Potential podcast. So first and foremost, I was thrilled when I found out that the title of your book is Real Food Keto, because from my perspective, that is just so needed in this space, an emphasis on real food. So first, welcome to the show. Congratulations on the book. And I would love to know, and either Jimmy, you can tackle this, or Christine, if you want to dive in, what was it that made you guys decide we need to take a real food stance on keto? Because neither one of you are new to the keto space. So what sort of contributed to that decision?
Yeah, thank you. So I'll just give a quick two cents and then Jimmy can share. But unfortunately, in today's society, you go to the grocery store and you see all these food-like products, and people are heavily depending on those things to get their nutrition. And I mean, even we see this in the keto community too, where people are relying too heavily on products. Now, there are some good products out there. You just have to read the labels. I mean, Jimmy and I use some of them, especially when we travel, because we'd rather be prepared than not. But emphasizing real food, I mean, it's sad we have to do that, but you know, it stresses the importance of how these foods being real food, our body recognizes these foods best and they're full of nutrients, whereas these products that you see on the inside shelves, a lot of them have to be fortified with nutrients, which means that the nutrients have been taken out of them due to processing, but then they have to add them back, which is kind of stupid. But it's really sad that we have to use that phrase real food when people should just automatically just call it food.
Well, and one of the things that I noticed, Elizabeth, having been an observer of this community for a very long time and even being active in the primal paleo real food movement there the last few years before keto caught on, you know, I saw this huge, huge void in talking about the micronutrients in food, because a lot of people love to talk about macros, but to me, the micro is where the dirty business of nourishment and satiety and health gains that we talk about so much with the macros, I think a lot of it, the unwanted stepchild of nutrition, is micronutrition. And I think we needed to put more emphasis on it, which is what we tried to do in Real Food Keto.
And you guys did a fantastic job with that, especially talking about the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals, not just protein, fat, carbohydrate. What I have seen, and Jimmy, you know that I focus a lot on the mindset side of health and happiness.
Yep.
What I've seen is a lot of people making food really about aesthetics, the way their body looks when they eat a certain way, and also about flavor, which are two really important things, right? How do we feel about our bodies? How healthy are we? And do we enjoy the food we're eating? But what has kind of taken a real back seat to the detriment of all of us is, am I fueling myself well? Not just, am I losing weight? Not just, does this taste good? But am I really giving my body the nutrition that it needs versus how can I mix up cream cheese and stevia and call it a snack?
You know? You're stepping on a lot of toes, which is why I love your work, Elizabeth. So, yeah, I think we have this mistaken notion in the community that it's only about like what you're eating. And that's it. And not the behavior behind the eating. It's something I'm trying to get into more and more in my own work in talking about this, because the head stuff, it matters. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, we try to help people through that. And you do such a wonderful job of that in your work. It's still going to be this ongoing battle because people want it to be about aesthetics. They want it to be about food tasting good. But how you fuel yourself is everything when it comes to diet and how you feel in response to that.
What I would love to chat a little bit about with you guys today, and I did ask my listeners if they had some questions for you, and they had some great ones that I'm excited to share with you, is this idea of simplicity, because complexity abounds, right? Whether it's what's the difference between paleo and primal, and what are the different ways to approach keto, real food keto versus more processed food keto, and all of that, I believe in simplicity. And I believe that even though we can talk a ton about micronutrients and the signs of micronutrient deficiency and the way to eat real foods, we can also keep it really simple. So I would love to ask each one of you if you could synthesize your message about nutrition, which I know is so hard to do because we could talk about this for weeks and years and months and thousands of pages. What do you want people to know about real food keto as an approach to eating?
Well, that is a loaded question. I think that for me, we just hear so much about people expecting others to eat 100% grass-fed beef, 100% organic, free-range eggs, all this sort of stuff. And if they're not doing it, then they're not doing the diet correctly. And you're going to scare off a lot of people who would benefit from a ketogenic diet, maybe because they can't afford those things initially. So my goal is obviously to focus on real food. Now, we want to have people make the best choices that they can for the situation that they're in. So if they can afford the grass-fed beef, organic eggs and free-range eggs, organic vegetables, then go for it. But if they can't, just do what they can do, but make sure that it's real food. I think too often we obsess about the quality of the food, and the quality does matter, but I don't want somebody to be scared off from doing this lifestyle just because they say they can't afford grass-fed beef. But in the long run, what they'll find is once they start nourishing their bodies correctly, they won't be hungry as often and they won't be spending as much money on groceries. So maybe they'll eventually get to the point where they can afford those real high quality ingredients.
And I think assessing where people are is so critically important. I think back to 410-pound Jimmy Moore, where I was about the lowest of lows. I was guzzling Coca-Colas and Little Debbie snack cakes and Taco Bell like they were going out of style. So any move in the direction of health was a good one. Even if I just, you know, cleaned up those things and had the diet version of soda, which is what I started off with, kind of shifting over to more diet soda, and then getting off the sugar and getting onto as many non-carbohydrate based foods as possible. That was the big jump for me. And obviously I didn't stay there. And so my message in its simplicity is assess where you are right now, wherever that is, even if you think you're doing really, really well, assess where you are and always strive to make improvements from there.
I love that. And I can so relate on from what both of you said. When I was at my heaviest, somewhere over 350 pounds, I just started ordering a smaller meal at Chick-fil-A because I used to go to Chick-fil-A every morning on my way to work, and I would get chicken minis and a chicken biscuit and a huge Diet Coke and hash browns. And I started by just saying either chicken minis or the chicken biscuit, but not both. And is that where I am now? Gosh, no. And is where I am now where I'll be in 5 years? Of course not. But I think that just is such an important message that even if you're not buying grass-fed beef or free-range chicken, or you're still eating Little Debbie snack cakes, you can still pursue an improvement today. So I love that. I think that's fantastic.
All day, every day. Yep.
There are so many misconceptions about keto, about what it is, about what it isn't. I am forever, as I'm sure you both are as well, forever answering questions that just reflect somebody doesn't necessarily understand what keto is and what keto isn't. Do you, both of you, have a myth about keto that you would love to bust? If you could get it out there to everyone who has ever heard of keto, what is something you'd like to clear up?
Wow, I can think of several, and I'm sure Jimmy will probably say one of the ones that I'm thinking of.
That's why I want you to go first so I can clean up.
So my big thing is I want people to get their fat from real food, solid food. So that means, I mean, if some people out there do the bulletproof coffee with the MCT oil, the butter, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And if that's the only meal that they do in the morning, that's fine.
And fat bombs, you can throw those in there as well.
I was going to, yeah. So,
yay!
But you have some people that will do their bulletproof coffee and eat a full meal thinking, well, that's how I get my fat in. The ketogenic diet is not eating sticks of butter. If you think about it, fat is twice as many calories or more than twice as many calories as protein and carbohydrates. So it's easier to get your fat calories up there so you don't have to eat sticks of butter. So I want people to not rely so heavily on the bulletproof coffee. And then these fat bombs, people do the fat bombs thinking it's an easy way to get their fat in as well. That's for some people that's maybe necessary. I mean, it may be the thing that kind of keeps them going, but I don't want people to think they have to eat these fat bombs in order to get their fat quota in for the day.
Yeah, macronutrient ratios drive me crazy. I'm like, just eat food, people. Let's not make this a math equation.
Right.
That's dieting again. So for me, I think the notion that if you have fat on your body, you should not be eating fat on your plate. I'm seeing that one more and more. Somebody, in fact, just before we got on this interview on Instagram, wrote me a message and said, yeah, I think I'm just going to cut out all the fat in my diet because I got plenty of fat on my body. I need to lose 40 pounds, so I'll eat low carb. And I'm going, what's that look like on a plate? Can you describe that? And she was like, oh, well, like maybe chicken breasts and broccoli. And I'm like, all right, get prepared because you're going to be miserable if you do that.
And hormonally, totally jacked up.
Yes, exactly. And no absorption of vitamins A, D, E, and K, which are all the fat-soluble vitamins. Yes, you mobilize stored body fat when you do that. But no, it doesn't take the place of dietary fat. So then the question becomes, how much fat is too much fat? So then that's where I think you tinker and test and customize it to the individual. One of the major themes we put in Real Food Keto is we are all bio-individual, which means there is no one-size-fits-all, sorry, USDA, for everybody to eat when it comes to diet. And so you got to tinker and test and find what works for you.
I'm so glad you brought that up about individuality, because one thing I'm always saying on the show, and welcome back to me stepping on toes again, it's really what I do best.
That's why we love you.
It's my specialty. I always say, if somebody tells you this is the way it is, this is the way it should be done, period.
Run.
Be very weird. Your spidey senses should immediately go way up, because we are all different. So along those lines, I would love to know how keto looks different for you, Jimmy, than it does for you, Christine. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I find that so many people are looking for a universal prescription for keto, whether that is percentage of protein or grams of fat or, you know, total carbohydrate. And the fact is, our bodies have to give us that information, and it will change as we get older, as our fitness improves, as we put on muscle, as we lose muscle, as our hormones shift. And I always find it really helpful. Like, I'm telling my clients all the time, I have a history with polycystic ovarian syndrome. I also, Christine, like you, have Hashimoto's. Mm-hmm. I eat a ton of cruciferous vegetables. In fact, I would say the majority of my plate at any meal is cabbage or cauliflower or Brussels sprouts. Mm. How does it look different for the two of you? What is something maybe that works for you, Christine, that doesn't work for you, Jimmy, and vice versa?
So for me, I could probably handle a few more carbohydrates in the form of non-starchy vegetables than Jimmy can, although that is changing. As you said, our environment, our age, different things affect how our food affects us, and so it's constantly changing. But right now, I love my vegetables. I love a big salad. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes, I will just have a big salad with some sort of protein on it, and I'll do just fine, and making sure that I get some fat on there too. So for me, that works, whereas Jimmy, you don't do as many vegetables, do you?
Yeah, I find, Elizabeth, that I thrive a little better with a little more meat-based kind of diet. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally carnivore, because I still am dubious about the gut health ramifications of that. So I'd say probably 95% of my diet is animal-based foods, and then the rest is vegetation. And in fact, just yesterday, we went out with a couple of keto friends up the road from here, and Christine got a salad that had meat on there, and then you added a little bit of a fatty sauce on there, and I got the burger without the bun and some squash and zucchini as my side. And so two different plates, both keto, but our own versions of keto.
What would you guys say to somebody who's trying to figure out what it is that works best for them? That is the essence of the work that I do in my own life for myself with my own body. It feels like every day I'm learning something and adjusting, and it's the work I do with my clients as well. What tips do you have, aside from, like, does this help you lose weight or are you putting on weight? What are some of the things that you look for in your own lives to know if the approach that you are taking is working for you?
Well, obviously, we have tested our blood sugar, so I've been curious about how certain foods affect me, and we have glucometers, and so I was curious at one point, okay, well, maybe I can handle a sweet potato, or maybe I can handle some of these so-called safe starches out there. Yeah, no. I tested my blood sugar before I ate a sweet potato, and it was in the upper 80s, I think, or low 90s. I ate the sweet potato, and then 30 minutes after I ate that darn sweet potato, my blood sugar was 196.
Whoa.
And yeah, near diabetic range. And it stayed there for, I think, hour two, it was still in the 180s.
Wow.
And then hour six, it was still not back at baseline. And
wow.
I just to make sure I hadn't had anything to eat other than, you know, that sweet potato.
And so, she's never had a weight problem in her life.
Yeah,
that's remarkable.
So for me, that was a big wake-up call. Okay, I cannot handle those sweet potatoes or safe starches, because I had the same result with the safe starches. And I would have never known that had I not tested my blood sugar. So testing to see how you feel is a big one. And oftentimes, if you have a food sensitivity, I have found like eating the Quest bars, I don't eat those things anymore. But I found a pattern after eating those that my heart rate would increase. So I had a Quest bar, and 15 minutes after I had every single time, my heart rate would be elevated. And that's a sign of a food sensitivity. So you have to listen to your body.
Well, and piggyback in on that, I would say that just generally being aware of what your body's doing. You know, if you feel really, really good, it doesn't matter really what anything else is happening. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
I think it's devalued because it's so simplistic, Elizabeth. But I think if more people just stayed in tune, how do I feel today? What are my energy levels like? Can I just spontaneously intermittent fast for 8, 10, 12 hours and be fine? You're in a good metabolic state if you're in that place.
I love that. And, you know, Christine, I was thinking about, as you were saying, your blood sugar response to that sweet potato. What's been fascinating to me is how my blood sugar responses have changed over time, especially for me as I have normalized my hormones and as I have put on muscle mass. Mm-hmm. What used to really have a significant elevation in blood sugar doesn't as much anymore, but other things do now. I am more sensitive now to dairy than I've ever been in my life. And I bring that up only to remind anybody listening that these things always change.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you can't eat the same way that helped you lose weight 10, 15 years ago and get healthy 10, 15 years ago. You have to constantly be a student.
Yes.
Of your own body. And it's something I try to talk about often in my own work that, okay, yeah, I could go back and eat the exact same way I did in 2004 when I went on the Atkins diet, but I wouldn't get the same results here 16 years later.
Yeah. And when people say that's not fair, I'm like, well, what's not fair about that? Our bodies are always changing. That's part of being alive. Like, it's part of getting older. And that's a great thing that we get to experience as our bodies change, as the benefit of still being here, still living, still breathing. So I think
that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure beats the alternative. The alternative. So one thing that I'm sure you all see very regularly in people who are experimenting with keto or new to keto is the pepperoni. We already mentioned, you know, the fat bombs, which if you haven't ever heard of a fat bomb, it's basically blending any sort of nut butter or cream cheese with non-nutritive sweeteners, like making yourself a dessert, more or less, of keto-friendly ingredients. And one of the reasons that you all explain in the book, Real Food Keto, about why you're so strongly emphasizing real food is because many of these hallmark, it's unfortunate they're a hallmark, but really these hallmark keto ingredients, heavy cream, pepperoni, cream cheese, whatever, are very lacking in their micronutrients. So they are not nutrient dense like we would see with, say, an avocado. An avocado would be higher in fat, but loaded with those micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, etc. Mm-hmm. The challenge that I would love to chat about is that the micronutrient effect often isn't as obvious. How a food tastes, what appeals to our palate, is far more obvious, which is why people are like, oh my gosh, a keto dessert recipe cookbook? Oh, I'm crazy about that. And then my hair turns gray, you know, with every sale of those such books. But the necessity of focusing on nutrient density, vitamins and minerals, often has to be overlooked because people don't feel it immediately. What are some of the red flags of nutrient deficiency that people should be looking out for? And or you can take it however you wish. What are some of the benefits? How will you feel better when you are checking these micronutrient boxes without crazy counting and tracking, just emphasizing real foods and minimizing those processed foods or less nutrient dense foods?
So, there are many, many things these micronutrients are needed for so many functions in the body. So in order to be able to produce adequate amounts of stomach acid, you need B6 and zinc. And I just drew a blank. There's gastrin. That was it. I drew a blank. So you need those. Those are the three major players in the production of stomach acid.
Maybe you need more micronutrients and you would have remembered faster.
No, it's living with you for 20 some years.
Touche.
So if you're deficient in B6 and zinc, you're not going to be producing enough stomach acid, which is going to prevent you from being able to digest your food properly. You might experience bloating, gas, just a sense of fullness, being too full. I know that there's confusion out there. Like when you hear about a ketogenic diet, it's very satiating. Yes, it is. So you have to learn the difference between whether you're just being satiated from the fat that you're eating or if you're not producing enough stomach acid and the food is sitting in your stomach for too long. Mm. And those are the signs that you'll feel the bloating and the excess fullness and gas and things like that. And so if you are not digesting your foods properly, that's just going to mess everything up further down the digestive system, which could possibly lead to autoimmunity. So your immune system needs zinc, vitamin D, calcium. If you don't have those nutrients, you're going to be sick often. Your wounds are not going to be able to heal. Your detoxification process pathways need certain micronutrients. So for phase one detoxification, you need the B2, B3, magnesium, and an enzyme that the adrenal glands produce called cytochrome P450. And then
you're using all those highfalutin words on Elizabeth's show.
I am. And then phase two needs your amino acids like glutathione, cysteine, glycine, sulfate, and methionine. So it's important to get these micronutrients in your diet or you're not going to be able to properly detoxify. And someone that has trouble detoxifying may carry a little bit of extra weight on their body because that's where these toxins are stored.
Well, and then a nutrient that people don't talk about near enough, and yes, it's a nutrient. Christine's got it in her left hand right now, is water.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's devalued. In fact, in our book, we call it the fourth macronutrient because it's so important. What happens, Christine, if people are just even a little bit deficient in water intake?
So they can feel fatigued. A lot of these things that people go to the doctor for, these chronic issues, oftentimes can be looked back at their hydration status. So you can experience fatigue, anxiety, irritability, depression, some of your headaches, constipation, cravings. Those are some of your earlier signs. Some of your later signs are back pain, migraines, fibromyalgia, colitis. So a lot of people go to the doctor for fibromyalgia symptoms when, you know, it could be just as simple as increasing their water intake. And a drop in more than 10% of your water, you could die. So, I mean, this is water is a very important nutrient.
Let's all take a sip.
I know, right? I was just thinking, I wish I had water within arm's reach, but I don't. I have coffee, though, so that sort of counts. I know. It dehydrates you.
That's why
it
doesn't count. She knows.
I know. I'm really glad that you brought up depression. And I believe in my heart of hearts that if people would move away from some of these foods that are not nutrient dense, whether it's in an approach to keto or it's just an approach to focus on convenience, grabbing the shakes, the bars, the keto cookies, whatever it is, on a regular basis, and focused instead on nutrient density, mood improves, mental clarity, energy, motivation. I believe that so many people who feel like they are unmotivated are just not fueling themselves well. And so their brains are not functioning as well. And I would love to know your thoughts on that. Focus, energy, motivation, and depression.
So there are many causes, I think, for depression. Not being able to absorb your fat-soluble vitamins is a big one. And then our gut health mm-hmm. is very important to our mood, because the gut is known as the second brain. 60% of your immune system is in the gut, and 90% of serotonin production is in the gut. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to happen, your gut microbiome has to be happy. Absolutely. And if you don't have good gut health, you're possibly going to be suffering from mood disorders. I know for me, that's the case. It was a combination of several things. Once I got my vitamin D up, I was able to get off antidepressants that I had been taking, you know, for a decade. And I know that I still struggle with my gut health because I do have Hashimoto's, and that came from not digesting my proteins properly. I firmly believe that. So I'm still working on my gut health, but it's so important. Just things we don't even make the connections to. We're still learning so much about the gut. And I hope that more and more resources will get out there. But yeah, we have to pay attention to how happy our gut health is.
Absolutely. Well, and I talk a lot about this too, Elizabeth, where you've got kind of this rash of school shootings and just people just acting crazy. And I think it has to be a direct result of something that's happened in our environment. And so what do you look at what's happened in the environment? You know, we've cut the fat. We tell people to eat more healthy carbs, defined as whole grains and things like that. You know, we expose them to chemicals that no other humans in all of human history have been exposed to, either in edible form or in household ingredients, or the glyphosate that's in the Roundup. I mean, all of this stuff plays a role, and it's so innocuous to the day-to-day person because they're just living their life and they're right. All the none the wiser.
And because it's in the grocery store, so it must be fine. But yeah, it's such an important conversation because, well, yes, I totally agree, Christine. There are so many factors that play a role in depression. The reality is, if I could like scream one message from the rooftop, it would be that the foods we put in our mouth, it's about so much more than the tag inside our genes and the number written on it, because this is about how we think. This is about how we feel. This is about how we show up in our relationships. It is about so much more than what tastes good and how it impacts our waistline.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that we need to mention too is stress. That will affect your gut health as well. Because what happens is if you're in a sympathetic state or a stress state, the blood flow goes from your gut to your muscles and your heart and your lungs to prepare you for that fight or flight response. So those good gut bugs are going to suffer. They're going to have their blood supply taken away if we're constantly in a stressed state. So stress, we need to mention that that's a big factor too. And I know stress is hard to avoid nowadays, but we have to do our best to kind of minimize that.
Stressed spelled backwards is desserts. So if you want to eat desserts, just keep being stressed.
There you go. There you go. Christine, you mentioned Hashimoto's, and that is something that we have in common. And there is a fairly prevalent school of thought that perhaps keto is not the best approach for individuals with Hashimoto's. And I know you share a bit, especially in the first part of the book, about your Hashimoto's and some other health challenges that you've walked through. What do you guys say to individuals who have any type of thyroid irregularity as it relates to a ketogenic diet?
So a lot of your thyroid problems stem from your thyroid depends on iodine and tyrosine. And so if you are iodine deficient, you're very likely to develop a thyroid problem. And so I would say that it's not necessarily a ketogenic diet that's bad. It's that they may be deficient in those micronutrients. And I know for me personally, I believe that a ketogenic diet has helped manage my Hashimoto's as best as it can. My numbers, I believe, would be a lot higher if I wasn't doing a ketogenic diet, because a ketogenic diet is a low inflammation diet. And so the tricky thing is to, you know, I believe that once you have an autoimmune condition with your thyroid, that it might be kind of dangerous to supplement with iodine. You would need to definitely work with somebody to do that, because sometimes supplementing with iodine when you have an autoimmune condition, it can make things worse. So just work with somebody who knows what they're doing and can walk you through that. But also the thyroid is produces fat-soluble hormones. And so if you're not eating enough fat, that's going to cause your thyroid to not work properly too. So in my opinion, a ketogenic diet is very helpful. I mean, there are other factors that go into why someone may not do well. We often hear these things about ketogenic diet causing dry eyes. Well, the dry eyes is from an electrolyte imbalance. It's not the ketogenic diet directly. What happens is when they go on a ketogenic diet, you're dumping glycogen stores, so you're going to develop an electrolyte imbalance. That's why it's important to start consuming the sea salt and your other electrolytes like calcium, potassium, magnesium, chloride, and those things. So it's not the ketogenic diet directly. It's just they're micronutrient deficient, so they can take care of their dry eyes by making sure their electrolytes are in balance.
That's a great point. It really goes back to the whole premise of your book, which is keto done right, real food keto that emphasizes the micronutrients your body needs to function optimally is going to make sure your body is firing on all cylinders, versus a version of keto that is convenience-based and flavor-based more than nutrient-based.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on the thyroid thing, I think sometimes people look at numbers and they don't look at context of numbers. Mm-hmm. So you look at a thyroid panel and you get it back and it's out of, quote, range. Well, think about what the range is from. It's from people that are probably mostly sugar burners.
Yeah.
And so we really don't have a lot of data on ketogenic dieters with Hashimoto's or even just ketogenic dieters in general and what their normal numbers should be. And when I wrote the book Keto Clarity, I actually asked Dr. Ron Rosedale about this, that, hey, what's up with all these people getting hypo numbers based on the numbers on the panel? And he's like, well, it's a lower number, but it doesn't mean it's a lower function. And that right. Maybe without the carbs in your diet, your thyroid doesn't have to work as hard. So
it's efficiency. So it's a reflection. Yes. Yeah. It's a reflection of efficiency versus abnormality.
That's right.
And you really have to pay attention to how you feel. As you were saying, Jimmy, your numbers can be lower, but if you're not having the symptoms like hair loss, being fatigued, cold all the time, weight gain, then it's probably not an issue for you.
I love that. And Jimmy, you mentioned Keto Clarity, and one of my listeners had a question that might be more reflective of cholesterol clarity and or keto clarity than real food keto. But they were asking about triglycerides. And I'm just going to read their question directly. Sure. And I know you'll be able to tackle this one with ease. She says, I've been reading a lot lately about losing fat and accessing stored triglycerides in adipose tissue. I'm curious about keto because you'd be eating a lot of red meat, right? And consuming red meat means consuming additional triglycerides. Does that interfere with your ability to burn fat?
It's a great question. So Whoever sent that in, thank you for that. The answer in simplicity, because I know you like that, Elizabeth, is no, because what we know about what raises triglycerides isn't consuming triglycerides, just as eating cholesterol doesn't raise your cholesterol. So I guess we could go back to what makes triglycerides go higher. There's one thing in your diet that does that.
Sugar.
Better than anything else. Sugar first and foremost, but really anything that turns to sugar in the body. So if you have insulin resistance and you're a hyper responder to carbohydrate, really all carbohydrates mm-hmm. could raise your triglycerides. If you want to test it, go get your triglycerides run. And then for the next 3 months, I don't want you to eat any sugar at all. But have like whole grain bread. Don't do that, by the way.
I know, I'm
Elizabeth
like,
would kill me. But
Right. But this is a theoretical debate. Yes.
If you wanted to test the theory, this is, yeah. And then you go back and test your triglycerides. And it's kind of the one marker on your entire lipid panel that will tell the tale of how well you're doing in controlling the carbs that are right for you. You asked a little bit earlier, how do you determine like all these things that are right for you? That's one thing. If you want to know what your carb tolerance is, if you are under 100 on your triglycerides, then that's a telltale sign that you've got your carbs down to exactly where they need to be. So be it 20 grams of carbs, be it 100 grams of carbs, even 200 grams of carbs. I've seen somebody have that many, but they're elite athletes and they still have really low triglycerides. So that trigs is a very important number, but no, red meat will not increase it.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to note that you can be keto and not rely on red meat.
That's true. And there's a new book. I do a podcast on Thursdays called Keto Talk with Jimmy Moore and Dr. Will Cole. And Dr. Cole recently released a book called Ketotarian. Mm. And it's all about how you can do a mostly vegetarian. He does recommend eggs and fish if you want to include that in your diet to get complete proteins. But he shows you how you can do it. And he's a big believer in it.
I love that. And her point in the question about fat loss and, you know, does it make fat loss harder? My experience, and I think this is a re-education for a lot of people, is that what determines whether or not your body is allowing for the burning of your stored body fat has way more to do with insulin and keeping insulin low than with dietary fat consumption. Granted, if you are over consuming and over exceeding your body's fuel needs because you're having fat bombs and, you know, packets and packets of nut butter every day, then
this is why I love Elizabeth.
Your body doesn't need to access your stored fat as fuel. It's not doing it as a favor. It's doing it when it needs it. But I always, you know, I'm sure you remind people of that a trillion times a day. But I think it's important to note that your body is not resistant to burning fat because you're consuming fat. It doesn't need to burn fat if it doesn't need that energy, and it can't burn that fat if insulin is elevated.
Yeah, and Jimmy has said many times that anything and, you know, too much can raise your insulin. Even who was it that said eating pebbles?
Yeah,
can...
Dr. Richard Bernstein, the famous type 1 diabetes low carb doctor. I interviewed him on the Live and La Vida Low Carb show one time, and he said, yeah, you could just eat pebbles and distend the gut and you'll have an insulin response.
Hmm. Interesting. Please don't try that at home.
No.
That doesn't sound pleasant at all.
We are not recommending that. No.
Can you digest that through the duodenum, Christine?
Oh my gosh. No, you, that, no.
Sorry. I just wanted to say duodenum on our podcast.
Oh geez. You guys are too funny. One other question that came in, and I certainly have a strong opinion on this one. I would imagine you both will as well. The question was about a ketogenic diet and, quote, what happens when you then go back to normal? I don't see keto as sustainable. Their words, not mine.
Wow.
Go, Christine. Get them.
Well, I'm not even sure where to begin with this. I mean, what's not sustainable about it? I mean, because you get to have bacon, you get to have, you know, lots of vegetables, you get to have good meat. I mean, what is, I would like to know what this person says, you know, they believe that it makes it not sustainable. We're talking about real food here.
And what's normal?
Well, I was, yeah, I may do a Jimmy Rants podcast about this one because that's a new show I do where I just rant on it. And this is one, it's a pet peeve of mine that people go keto and, well, when can I end it so I can go back to eating normal again? And I think those are the people that forever get stuck in their own way.
Yeah.
And it's why they're not successful. It's why you still have a podcast, because you have people out there that still believe that kind of stuff, Elizabeth. And unfortunately, they don't embrace the whole lifestyle change. Now, that's become kind of cliche these days, and I don't use the terminology as much. But it is something that once you make a change in your habit, this is a new habit, and you've got to treat it as such and not this kind of, I've been on a diet, I'm off a diet, and now I can go back to eating normal again. And let's talk normal. What's the normal way standard American diet? That is abnormal. That is about the stupidest diet in the entire world. To sit there and eat all the junk that I used to eat when I was 400 plus pounds, when you were 350 pounds. I mean, I don't want to go back to eating that way again. It was no fun.
And I think we would have at the, I'll speak for myself. I would have called that normal, right? It was back in the day. Yeah, yeah. I got a breakfast. It was normal to me because everything is relative, right? Getting a breakfast sandwich and hash browns and a diet soda on the way to work was normal. And going out to a Mexican restaurant and eating a basket of chips before my meal came and then having my meal and a margarita, that was normal. But I also felt terrible and I was depressed and I had no social life and I lacked confidence and I wasn't healthy. And to me, when somebody thinks of something other than, say, real food keto as normal, I would imagine that maybe their impression of keto is bacon and butter.
Yeah.
And so I get it. If that's how you're coming at it, then I wouldn't want to eat that. I love bacon, but I would certainly miss a lot of, you know, my veggie rich meals or whatever they perceive as off limits. But I think, and it's kind of a great note to wrap up on, which is what we're really talking about here. And you guys do a fantastic job of going into all the levels of detail that anybody could ever need. And then some in the book is we're talking about eating real food and making sure you're giving your body what it needs and not giving it what it doesn't while making sure you feel your very best. If that's not normal, like I don't want normal.
Well, let me give you an example going back to this person with the question. So my dad, on my dad's side of the family, we've got Italian in us. And so my daddy loves his pasta. He loves his bread. And I asked him one time about doing the ketogenic diet. And he goes, yeah, I could never give up my pasta or my bread. My dad had to get to a point where he started having some health issues. He saw his family members starting to have some health issues. His older brother, the middle one, Tommy was middle. One of his younger brothers died of cancer. And then shortly after that, his father died of diabetes and heart disease. One of my cousins on his side had a heart attack at, I'm trying to remember his age. He was really
36.
Yeah, 36. He was really young. And seeing my dad, seeing a lot of the people that he used to work with dying, you know, after they retired, you know, of health issues. And my dad had just retired in January. I mean, this was kind of a wake up call to my dad. And so my dad started the ketogenic diet. I mean, this Italian started the ketogenic diet, and he's done great. He's lost 50 pounds. He's seen a lot less inflammation in his body. So I think some of it has to come back to you need to be, I guess, sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you got to realize the importance of doing this lifestyle to control and ward off these things more than wanting your bread and pasta and other processed foods.
Well, and for me, I don't want to be normal.
Yeah.
I want to be wonderful, right? Yeah. I don't want average levels of fitness. I want to be super fit. I don't want average levels of success. I want to be super successful. I don't want average levels of happiness. Yeah. I want to exceed the norm wherever I can because I've got one shot at this life and I wasted a damn lot of it. So
here, here.
You know, that's talk about Jimmy rants. There's Elizabeth's rant. I'm not interested in normal, and maybe more people need to consider how appealing normal really is.
Yeah, I agree.
So I would love to wrap up with a final question and then have you guys share where people can connect and learn more about all the awesome work that you are doing. I recently finished my first book, and so I just have all the more respect for what you guys have done. But I have a special part of my book that makes it my favorite. And so now I feel like forever I'll be asking authors, do you have a section, a page, a chapter, a part, a message in your book that is your favorite? One that gets you the most excited or that was the most fun to write or that you hope people will really check out the most?
What's that phrase you use? That's like asking which of your children is your favorite. oh, wow. For me, I think it would be the chapter on digestion, because if your digestion is working properly, you're going to be able to absorb those micronutrients and going to deal with, you know, not getting autoimmunity and gut dysbiosis and all that sort of thing. So I think that it would have to be the chapter on digestion for me.
I'm going to go with the index. I'm just kidding. So I think, I mean, everybody at this point kind of knows the basics of keto. So what is in this book that I think stands out that I'm so proud of? It's got to be the vitamins and the minerals mm-hmm. chapters. I mean, there is so much information I've never seen anybody else put in any other book that if you just get it for just those two chapters alone, you'll get a whole bunch more if you get the rest of the book. But just those two chapters alone, you're going to learn how when you're deficient in this vitamin, then this other process in the body has to compensate with this. And it's just, it's amazing how beautifully and wonderfully made our bodies are. And I think we tried to articulate that in those chapters as to why sufficiency in your micronutrition is probably as important, if maybe not a little more important than the macronutrients.
I love that. And I could not agree more. And I'm so grateful for this book and for you guys taking the time out today to share some of it with my audience. The book is called Real Food Keto. Where can folks connect with you?
So we have a website for the book, realfoodketo.com, and I have a website, rebootingyournutrition.com. You can write to me there and ask about my services, and I will write back to you.
And we also have an audiobook for Real Food Keto that Christine and I actually spoke. I've done like 5 audiobooks by myself, Elizabeth, so I was like, you want to read with me, Christine? She didn't realize how hard it was. Are you doing an audiobook for yours, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I just finished the recording about 2 weeks ago.
When you're a podcaster, they like demand that.
It's yes. Like,
how can you not? In fact, my publisher didn't even have an audiobook division until Cholesterol Clarity, and people were just banging on my door. Please. I'm like, okay. I don't know how to do that, but okay.
That's awesome.
So they created it. So I have the first 2 books with Victor Belt Publishing on audiobook, Cholesterol Clarity, then Keto Clarity. So
that is so cool.
Yeah. And so I'm at livinglavitalowcarb.com, or if that's too much to remember, you can just Google Jimmy Moore. And the first 3 pages is like everything I've ever done. So it just means I've been out there a long time.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. I'm so grateful for your work and so grateful for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
All right, my friends, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I want to wrap up, as I always do, with a meal I loved recently, as well as a workout that I did and enjoyed recently. I do not enjoy all of my workouts, but I love sharing the ones with you that either challenge me or are a lot of fun or a little bit of both. The meal I loved recently, you might have seen on my Instagram story. It is the cowboy chili from Predominantly Paleo. And the thing I love about this chili is that it combines 2 meats. I used beef and pork, but you could totally make it leaner with turkey and a leaner ground beef or chicken or whatever you desire. The other thing that just to me adds to the flavor, having 2 different kinds of meats instead of just 1. The other thing that I love about it is that there's no beans, no corn, nothing kind of more starchy in there, which works for me and the way I love to eat. The flavors are amazing. It's got carrots in there. It's got tomatoes in there. If you search Predominantly Paleo Cowboy Chili, it'll come right up, or I will make sure to link to it on the show notes page for today's episode, which you can find at primalpotential.com/542. There's no in the hyperlink. primalpotential.com/542. I will link to that chili recipe. You will love it. And a little tip. So I made enough for me and my boyfriend and leftovers, but the leftovers weren't quite enough for a meal for the both of us. So what I love to do to bulk up leftovers, especially a leftover soup, or in this case, a leftover chili, is I got a couple of bags of frozen cauliflower rice, and I'll cook that up and put the leftover chili over it. And that just adds to the volume. It's a great way to extend leftovers, and it adds to the satiety factor of the chili. Love, love, love that. A workout that I enjoyed recently
was very simply a 10-minute AMRAP, so as many reps as possible in 10 minutes of 10 deadlifts, 10 burpees, 10 box jumps. So you do 10 deadlifts, then 10 burpees, then 10 box jumps, and you keep repeating that until 10 minutes has expired. That will get you going. You will be wishing for the time to expire for sure. It's a lot of fun. Also, I want to remind you guys before we go that the waitlist is open for the Winter 2019 12 Weeks to Transformation. So you can head over to the show notes page for today's episode, primalpotential.com/542, and the link to join the waitlist will be there. If you want to learn more about the 12 Weeks to Transformation, listen to episode 515. It explains what it is, who it's for, who it's not for, what's included, what you can expect, how much access to me you will have, how it is different from listening to the podcast, working with me as your coach, and also, of course, how much it costs, all in episode 515. I will be opening up registration to the waitlist within the next week. So hop on the waitlist because space is limited. I do limit registrations because I want to make sure that I am available to everybody. Lastly, before we go, today's episode is brought to you by Fabletics. You might have heard of Fabletics before, maybe on TV commercials. It's Kate Hudson activewear line. Kate Hudson, the actress, she launched an activewear line. She wanted activewear to be affordable and adorable and functional. I've shared before that with CrossFit workouts, it is so critical to not have your pants, your shorts, your leggings be falling down and not have your boobs popping out of your sports bra. That is a real thing. That is a real thing. Or just not being comfortable doing things like jumping rope or box jump or burpees because your boobs are bouncing all over the place. Not fun at all. I was spending more money than I wanted to on leggings and sports bras and shirts from activewear companies that I really love, Nike, Athleta, Reebok, Lulu. They're amazing, but their prices are very high. And activewear gets dirty and sweaty and stinky. And so I'm sorry, I don't want to spend $100 on a pair of leggings. And you don't have to when you shop through Fabletics. The clothes are adorable, super cute. I wear them out and about almost every day, truly. If you see me walking around Cape Cod, chances are I'm wearing my workout gear and chances are it's Fabletics. Very, very cute, very, very adorable, very functional in the gym. I can squat, I can jump, I can run, and it holds up and stays put, which is huge. Most importantly, it is so affordable, especially relative to some of those names that I mentioned, the Reeboks, the Athletas, the Lulus, the Reeboks, etc. You can, when you shop through fabletics.com/primalpotential, you can get two pairs of leggings for like $25. That's insane. Not only that, all of their prices are so reasonable. I can get an outfit and a half from Fabletics for the price I was paying for one piece from some of those other places. So it has replaced my shopping from other outlets, and I am a diehard Fabletics fan for sure. Check them out. If you shop through fabletics.com/primalpotential, you get that initial deal on the leggings, two pair, $24, $25, and you will not regret it. I've been buying them for my family members. I've had so many listeners say, I just got my stuff. I love it. It's amazing. I'm getting it for my sister, my kid, my mother. I know that's what my mom's getting for Christmas. She already knows. She already told me. I heard on the podcast you said I was getting Fabletics for Christmas. I can't wait. She recently started doing CrossFit. Anyways, check them out. Fabletics.com/primalpotential. If you have questions about today's episode, make sure to let me know. Have a great day. I'll chat with you soon.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Primal Potential Podcast, where my goal is not to inform you, but to transform you. And if you would like to receive free motivation and strategy and recipes, workouts, meal ideas every week right to your inbox, just text the word Primal to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. It's a great way to get the tools, the strategies, and the practical implementation assistance that you need to create your own transformation between podcast episodes. Just text the word Primal to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. See you there.